Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Aftershock Monday episode, and it's also a 12 days of the Comic Source episode. So 8 episodes to put out today, as this is the 8th day of 12. And I'm just going to go over a bunch of different number ones from recent Aftershock series that have started up. Some of them are still ongoing. Some of them have finished. But my thought is, if I can introduce you guys and kind of go into depth on some of these number one issues, you may realize what a wonderful publisher and a great publisher Aftershock is. One of these series might just be, you know, scratching you right where you itch, and you'll have a leg up to go and know what you want to pick up next time you're at the comic store. Maybe you want to look for the trade online. It's just a chance to spotlight some other creators and some of the wonderful work that that Aftershock does. So let me go ahead and dive into the issue that I'm going to talk about today. It's The Man Who Effed Up Time, issue one, The Here and Now. It's from writer and co-creator John Layman. The art is by artist and co-creator Carl Mostert. We've got colors by Dee Cuniff. And Jonathan Layman actually letters the issue as well. So this is a really fun book. Has to do with a guy who time travels and things don't go the way you would hope, right? Time travel is a tricky business. And the name, The Man Who Effed Up Time, it's kind of a colloquialism, I guess you'd say, because the cover, you know, literally says F, hashtag, ampersand, percentage symbol ED. So it would be the man who, you know, up time would be the way you, maybe a lot of people would read it. But when you know, see it in solicitations and stuff, they just abbreviate it to the man who effed up time. So great concept. Let's go ahead and get started. So when you turn to the first page, it says now, but it's not any kind of now that you would recognize, right? There's this guy in samurai armor riding what looks to be a stegosaurus, holding a crossbow, chasing a guy who looks relatively normal, jeans, you know, long sleeve red shirt, wearing a backpack and glasses, running at the top of his speed, wearing some Nikes. So he looks normal, but you know, there's a dinosaur chasing him. Samurai on a dinosaur, and all the people in the background, the women are wearing what looks to be Viking garb, including the helmets with the horns, and every one of the men is dressed like Abraham Lincoln. Three-piece suit, stovetop hat, they've all got chin beards. Like, what is going on? And we get the narration saying, yeah, okay, I knew I was breaking the rules when I did it, but really I told myself I was just bending them. Bending or breaking, though, there's only one rule, the cardinal rule for this sort of stuff. And what he's referring to, this sort of stuff, time travel. And at the bottom of the page, do not F up time. And as the guy continues to run, he's telling people, excuse me, out of the way. And he's talking about the butterfly effect, where even the smallest change in the past can have millions of unforeseen consequences. And as a result, you know, things get all screwed up. That's just time travel 101, he says. And the samurai is calling out, surrender, criminal, in the name of the king. In the name of King Abraham Lincoln IV, I command you to surrender. And the architecture, the city he's running through, it's all looks like sandstone. Like everything is sort of the same color tan. We see a pyramid in the background. And he's firing the crossbow at this guy. Guy rounds the corner. And the samurai riding or dinosaur riding samurai turns the corner as well and comes to a halt because he just sees a sea of hats and a sea of Viking horns. And he's not sure where the guy went. He's kind of lost himself in the crowd. And the guy's thinking to himself that he should have known better. He should have. And in fact, he does know better. This whole world that he's in shouldn't be. And he doesn't know how it exists. But somehow he effed up, and we see that he's walking. He did indeed steal a stovetop hat from somebody. We see a guy who's missing his. And as the guy kind of gets to the town square, I guess you'd say, like I said, pyramids, a lot of pyramids, a lot of kind of this ancient, almost Babylonian looking architecture. There's pterodactyls flying in the sky with Abraham Lincoln clones. writing them. There's banners hanging from what looks to be this palace saying, Abe, honest, obey, Abe. Yeah, time is all effed up for sure. And he's thinking, man, I really should have listened to the professor. What the F have I done? So we flash back to the previous day. And he's thinking, well, the professor said it a little more eloquently than just, you know, don't F up time. And somebody's talking about how imperative it is to take all possible precautions against the slightest disruption in the time stream, because the slightest seemingly most inconsequential deviation could obviously have cataclysmic consequences. And it's Professor Kendricks. He's the one that's in charge of the temporal physics department at A Finer Tomorrow Laboratories, which is where the guy that we met in the first couple pages works. And after Professor Kendricks has sort of given this warning, he says, I believe we're ready. The other two people that work on the project are Professor Stooch and Dr. Cook. And the three of them basically are the temporal physics department at A Finer Tomorrow. And it seems they're ready for their experiment, whatever that might be. We do get an introduction to the guy we saw on the first couple of pages. His name's Sean Bennett. He's the lab assistant. All his boards are showing green as well. And so there's this platform that they kind of kick the power onto, and it starts whirring, and there's sort of a shimmering effect, and it basically creates a portal apparently into 2 million years earlier. We see a woolly mammoth in the background, and Professor Kendrick, the one who's in charge, steps through and he picks a flower and then walks back through, and they shut down the machine. And he's overjoyed. He's saying, success, it works. Here's the long extinct Silphium papavera ciae. This first time this particular plant has been on the planet in almost 2 million years, at least in a non-fossilized form. And from this small flower, we're going to learn so much. So, I mean, first of all, I can't believe if this was the first time that they time traveled that they didn't have a bunch of cameras set up to record the event. Maybe they're trying to keep it a secret. I don't know. You would think news cameras and all kinds of crazy stuff. But the Professor Kendrick's going on to say he didn't even know if the prototype would work. He had a last minute breakthrough. He added just last night a neutrino manifold to stabilize the oscillation frequency of the tachyon harmonics. And had he not done that, he says we might be looking at the world's most expensive paperweight. And Sean has a question to ask. He's saying, yeah, you know, about this breakthrough, what inspired you to? And before he can even finish his question, the doctor on the team clearly doesn't like Sean Bennett. He clearly, I don't know, maybe he's just a jerk, but he calls him a janitor boy. He's like, yo, janitor boy, less stupid questions, more janitor boy cleaning. And Sean Bennett, he responds to Dr. Cook by saying, I'm a lab assistant, not a janitor. And he calls him Grant. I'm a lab assistant, Grant. And he responds, that's Dr. Cook to you, Sean, or if you'd prefer, lab assistant Bennett. And they're kind of at each other. So it's clearly there's some history there. So there's some animosity. And Kendrick's saying, it's not necessary. You know, I love that he's enthusiastic and his natural curiosity. And Dr. Cook kind of cuts him off saying, I'm sure, Professor, but you got work to do. He's got work to do. If we're going to present these findings to the board, you know, in your capacity as an invaluable lab assistant, can you make sure this place is clean? Sweep the floors, wipe down the equipment, printer stocked with ink and paper, empty the trash cans, you know, all that terribly important lab assistant stuff you got those fancy degrees for. Oh, wait, that's right. I'm the one with the degrees. You dropped out. So again, there's animosity there. There's history there. And a lot of it maybe stems from the fact that Dr. Cook is just a dick. So he goes, last thing, you know, clean up my desk before you leave. And Bennett's thinking about how crappy his life is as he's sweeping up the floor. And he says, yeah, so this was my life. You can't really blame me for what happens next based on what I'm putting up with. And then he says, well, I guess it depends on your definition of me, I suppose. And we're like, wait, what does that mean? So anyway, he goes across the street to a pub and orders a drink. You know, he's had a rough day. And outside, we see somebody with a hoodie kind of in the background. And then when he goes in to sit down and order his drink, he's in there a few minutes later. And Bennett, meanwhile, is sipping on his whiskey and thinking, Janitor boy, man, F you, Grant. You rotten no good. And then we see the guy in the hoodie kind of slide up next to him and ask him if he had a bad day. And Bennett's like, man, you don't know the half of it. And the guy in the hoodie actually does. He goes, jerk boss, right? He goes, yeah, you really don't know the half of it, except he's not my boss. And here we get the history. He's his old college roommate. Spoiled rich kid who sailed through his temporal physics thesis based on my notes and my research. And I couldn't even get the student loans I needed to complete my studies. So there we find out, right? Cook stole Bennett's research and his work that he'd done. Well, Bennett had to drop out because he couldn't even go back to school. He couldn't afford to stay in school. So that's why he's working as a lab assistant. And Cook got the job that should have been Bennett's in the first place. And this guy in the hoodie is kind of listening, still isn't taking his hood down. So you kind of, you know, start to wonder, who is this guy? And Bennett goes on to say, yeah, the best I could get is a part-time gig. And, you know, I'm working alongside him and he demeans me and berates me any chance he gets. And he's also going out with my ex. I mean, just like piling on, right? And the guy in the hoodie turns to Bennett and he says, whoa, sure sounds like you had some tough breaks in the past. Bet you wish you could rewind a bit and course correct, get things back to where they should be. I mean, you're just as much a brainiac as anybody else in that lab, especially Grant Cook. You just need the opportunity to show him. And all this information like takes Bennett by surprise. He's like, wait, how do you know all this stuff? And when he turns and looks, he sees himself. He's the guy in the hoodie. He's the guy in the blue hoodie with the glasses and the goatee. It's him. And he says, hey, it seems to me that a guy with access to a time machine would be in a perfect position to go back and fix all this stuff. So he actually holds his finger to his lips and he tells Bennett to hush because Bennett's freaking out. Present Bennett is freaking out. He's saying, you're me or future me. And he's thinking, you know, when I said I told myself I could bend the rules in order to time travel, I wasn't speaking figuratively. Like he literally came and told him. And he says, the future Bennett in the hoodie says, best not get too hung up on who I am or will be. Instead, just think of me as opportunity. Here, take this. And he hands him a bag. I think he's trying to keep the interaction to a minimum. And present Bennett, red shirted Bennett says, wait a minute. You want me to go back in time and change my life, change your life? That's crazy. You know, do the wrong thing in the past and you can cause a disaster. It's rule number one. You do not F up time. And future Bennett, blue hoodie Bennett says, hold on, you really think I'm a guy who's going to give you bad advice? Like, why would I give myself bad advice? And present Bennett, red shirt Bennett says, yeah, I guess that makes sense. You do have a lot to gain from me turning my life around. Okay, and you can see the wheels turning, but he knows he messed up. The plan made sense on the surface of it, right? So Bennett goes back to the lab. He's like, am I crazy to do this? It wasn't like he was going back very far, you know, just a couple days. You know, what's the harm? So he tells the security guy who's guarding the desk that he left his AirPods in the lab. He heads in there. He says, I'm going to set it to go back a week. Nothing that could, you know, too radically mess things up. And he turns it on. Not enough to change the world, but just enough to change his life is what he's hoping. So he steps through and opens up the backpack that his future self gave him. And he's got a notebook. And that future notebook, as it turned out, had all the detailed schematics for the time machine and also for that neutrino manifold that could stabilize the oscillation frequencies of the tachyon harmonics. So apparently that brilliant idea that Professor Kendricks had actually came from Bennett. So it's very circular. Like Bennett gets the idea from the schematics of the time machine, which he got from Professor Kendricks, and Kendricks got the plans from the manifold from this. So you see how it all, so he's thinking about, you know, what he's going to say. Here you go, Professor Kendricks. What's this? Just a few ideas I put together in spare time. And he's thinking about it. And he's trying to figure it out. So that means that when we use the time machine for the first time last night, or when we use it for the first time next week, it's because of my notes to Professor Kendrick that I got from seeing Professor Kendrick. So even he's, you know, he sees how it's all circular and how it should work. and how it really, it should elevate him. You know, he's going to get credit for it basically. And he thinks I've been given a second chance. So he goes ahead and leaves. He says bye to the guard. And I think here's where he messes up. Like if he had just done that, then maybe things would have been okay. But he's like, you know, he's feeling pretty good about it. Well, maybe I could change a few other things too. So he decides to send some roses to his ex-girlfriend, the one who's dating Dr. Cook. And maybe he'll have his girlfriend back when he returns to the prison. And if not, maybe he can find some other means of consolation. And he goes and he buys lottery tickets because apparently he knows the numbers. And with a $13 million jackpot, he says he could buy a finer tomorrow lab. And the first order of business would be to send that smug Grant Cook to the unemployment line. Like I said, it was a good plan. So apparently he did three things. He left himself the schematics and all the information. He went and bought a lottery ticket. He sent his girlfriend flowers. So he thinks that's a good plan. So he goes and he walks through the portal again, and he should be walking right back into the lab just a week later. But when he steps through, he's what the F? And he's outside the lab. So things have shifted a little bit. The lab is in front of him. The building looks completely different. It's still a finer tomorrow. But on either side of him are these hedges that are sculpted in the shape of Abraham Lincoln. And like I said, his reaction is, what the F? There's pterodactyls flying in the air. And the narration says, things didn't exactly turn out according to plan, but you already know this. And he turns as we see that that samurai that was riding the dinosaur on the first page is basically riding up to him saying, excuse me, Denison, why are you attired so strangely? And Bennett says, huh? I'm going to need to see your citizenship papers. He's like, citizen what? And then he takes off running, and that's where we caught up to it. You know, we saw on the first page with the samurai riding dinosaur riding samurai. Get that backwards. It's just such a strange thing to say. The dinosaur riding samurai yelling at him, halt, criminal. Now we've kind of caught up to where we were when he saw that palace or whatever it is in the city square with all the Abraham Lincoln banners. And he's thinking, well, at least I managed to get out of that trouble. But I'm finding the streets here roughly correspond to the streets of my old reality. So he thinks maybe I'll go check out my old apartment building, what should be in my apartment building. And, you know, I can get off the street and maybe figure something out. So he goes inside. He sees that on his mailbox, he does have his name on apartment 4C. And he's trying to figure out how he's going to get in. He's standing outside the door. And all of a sudden, we see somebody yell Sean Bennett from off panel. And as he turns, he sees these robots, clearly some kind of police force. And they basically shove him to the ground, breaking the door off the hinges. At least he's in his apartment. And he says, what's happening? Who are you? And one of them responds, future police, temporal crime prevention. Sean Bennett's in big, big trouble. And they basically tell him, you've made unauthorized alterations to the time stream. This is a felony. We're going to give you 2 days to fix what you did, every last bit of it, or else. And Bennett's like, or else what? And he says, does the address 2937 Pine Street mean anything to you? And that's the house where Bennett grew up. And we see 25 years earlier, there's one of those temporal police robots. And he's saying packages secure. And he's literally sitting down on the ground next to Bennett's crib. And he says, just give us the word. So basically what they're telling Bennett is, hey, you messed up the time stream. And you need to fix it, or you're not going to live long enough to F it up. They will fix the time stream by killing Bennett when he's a little baby. So that's the cliffhanger that it ends on. And great story, great concept. Really, really cool. What possibly with those three things, how were any of the things that Bennett did, how could they have like affected something so far back in the past. You know, Abraham Lincoln, women wearing a Viking garb, all the men dressed like, it's one thing for Lincoln to be, you know, the ruler, what they say, King Abraham Lincoln the Fourth, but for all the men to dress like him, like it just like, how did one of those things lead to another? So you got to think there's more to the story. Like, are we going to see other versions of Bennett show up? Like, there's just so much that's still up in the air, but just such a great concept. And the Kyle Mostert art, I love Kyle Mostert's art, you know, fine lines, really cool concepts. The colors in this are very bright. I mean, there would be a tendency to maybe go a little bit more muted with this kind of story. I don't think that muted colors would service Mostert's art as well. I think with the fineness of his lines, I think D. Cunniff using the really bright colors just makes things pop. And, you know, especially when you're dealing with a future story, I think bright colors give it a certain tone and a certain feel. I think Mostert is really underrated in his storytelling. Facial expressions are good. I'm not a huge fan. Like, if there's anything that I had to nitpick and say that he can improve on, his panel layouts, like the panels on the page, don't really excite me. They're not very dynamic. And also the angles, like his camera angles in the panels, it's you're pretty much like medium distance, straight on, like a lot of the time. So that's somewhere else where he could move things around to make it a little bit more interesting. But for the most part, again, I just love his art. And we get a couple of pieces of back matter in the back of the book that are pretty interesting. There's one from HR at Finer Tomorrow Laboratories, and it's to Mr. Grant Cook, a letter, and it says, "We received your complaint about your coworker, Sean Bennett." And you read through this, and basically Cook complained about Bennett being weird and goofy looking, and you know, there's like, that's not grounds for termination. And basically it sounds like Cook was just trying to get Bennett fired. And HR is like, "You're a dick. Stop calling him janitor boy. And you know, get along, stop being a jerk." Basically, we also have Smartypedia, which I guess would be this world's version of Wikipedia. And it's the page about the attempted assassination of Abraham Lincoln. So we get just a little blurb here about how Abraham Lincoln was, the 16th president of the United States, it says, and later first king of the United States, as well as a direct ancestor to our beloved King Abraham Lincoln the sixth. And apparently, reading through this, a stranger appeared from midair as if by magic and was able to kill Booth a mere second before he pulled the trigger to assassinate the president. So, you know, like, what does that mean? And obviously, that's how Lincoln survived and became, you know, more influential and what have you, and part of how everything got all screwed up, but doesn't really explain that much, because again, Bennett didn't go back that far, so still a lot of questions to be answered. And then the last piece of back matter we have is an incident report from the police, and it's basically describing, this is from that dinosaur riding samurai, and he's explaining, "Yeah, I was on patrol, found a suspicious looking individual, and when I requested his citizenship papers, he ran off, and he was lost in the crowd. Later, another citizen filed a report of a stolen hat, and that leads this officer to conclude that the hat was stolen by the suspect, which he uses to blend into the crowd." And he gives a description of him. And then on the following page of the incident report, we get a sketch artist sketch of what Bennett looks like. So again, just really fun, really interesting, not too serious. Jonathan Lehman, I think both people know him from his work on Chew. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe because that series ended and he hasn't done anything, you know, kind of high profile since, that people have kind of forgot what a talent he is. He definitely has a talent for storytelling and telling fun stories. And I wish he would do more comic work. Actually, I'd love to see him. I mean, he was on Detective just for like a minute. I really would love to see him on, I mean, I don't think he'd necessarily suit Batman, but some lesser characters, you know, like I think he would do well in a booster book or a Blue Beetle book. Blue Devil would be, you know, great. Martian Manhunter, Red Tornado, like, you know, maybe even Aquaman. I think he could tell some interesting stories, but even just having him put out more creator owned stuff, I would like to see. But yeah, this is a really fun one. If you're a fan of time travel stories, I definitely recommend it. Like I said, the Carl Mostert art is great. Colors by D. Cunniff are very bright and vibrant. It's definitely worth your time to check it out. So that's going to do it. I want to wish everybody Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Hope you're enjoying all these episodes we're putting out for the 12 days of the Comic Source. Please enjoy your holiday no matter what you celebrate. Be responsible. Be safe. We're almost out of the woods. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And next Christmas, you know, we'll all be able to look back at Christmas 2020 that was and think about how terrible it was. We didn't get to spend it with friends and family like we normally would have, and we can celebrate all the more next year. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.